Digital Music. Digital Music. Digital Music Trends, episode 87, 8th of September, 2011. Hello everyone, and welcome to Digital Music Trends. This week I'm really happy to welcome to the show Ashley Eldson. He is the main writer. You know, he basically created the blog The Palm Sound, which is at the-palm-sound.blogspot.com, and it's great to have him on the show because he's an absolute expert in everything to do with mobile music and making music on the move. So hi Ashley, and how's it going today?
I'm very well. Great to be on the show. Thank you.
Cool. Well, you know, it's great to have you on. And I just wanted to get a bit of a background on Palm Sounds, the blog. You know, how did it start and you know, how did it develop?
Right. Well, it's a good question. I started the blog 5 years ago. And the reason that it started was I was always struggling to find time to make music and to find a space where I had more than 10 minutes at a time to try and work through some of my musical ideas, and it never happened.
Yeah.
And at the time I had one of these old Palm Pilots, and I discovered that there was some music making programs that you could get for these little devices. And you know, back then, 5 years ago, you know, some of those were really quite basic. There were a few that were absolutely incredible, and even by today's handheld standards, way ahead of their time. And I started writing about them after using them for a few years, and it kind of just went from there. And I started back in I think 2006, writing a little bit here and there. And I don't think anyone read anything that I wrote back in 2006. And then slowly, as more people started to become aware of using like PDAs and smartphones for making music, things took off. Then the iPhone came along, and Android, and now the iPad, and well, the rest is history, as they say.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, as I said, I actually came across your blog a number of times in the past, you know, without knowing you. So it's definitely a great resource for anybody that is looking to make music with their mobile devices, whichever, you know, kind of operating system they have. So I wanted to, you know, you've hit a real gold mine in terms of, you know, the subject, because there's so much stuff out there that is being released all the time, and a lot of companies are turning to mobile to expand their user base. So let's start by talking about the latest developments of this particular area. So okay. One thing that you were talking about earlier in the prep that sounds incredibly interesting is the concept of Core MIDI. So would you mind talking us through what Core MIDI is, and you know, why there was a necessity to create this kind of new standard?
Okay, well, what Core MIDI is as Apple have developed iOS, they've slowly included more and more of the desktop application frameworks into the mobile operating system. And one that came along, and I think it came along with iOS 4, was Core MIDI. Now, this was it's kind of unique for a company like Apple, or, you know, any big software house, to put what is effectively a music framework into a mobile operating system, which is, you know, you might think it's a slightly strange move, but if you take it all the way back to when Apple at first introduced the iPhone, they did actually say that the iPhone was going to be OS X on a mobile device. So from that point of view, it's quite a sort of straightforward and congruent move with what they stated right at the beginning. Now, what Core MIDI gives to developers is the ability to put virtual MIDI ports into their applications. And with virtual MIDI ports implemented in an application, it means that different applications running in a multitasking environment, so more than one application running simultaneously on, say, an iPad, can talk to each other across their virtual MIDI ports. So that means they can sync clocks, they can send MIDI on and off data and other data. You can use accelerometer to create emotion and control parameters from one application to another. And this is something that really hasn't happened before with mobile devices. And if you look up until what we've had to date with iOS, applications haven't really been able to talk to each other. There's been a degree of being able to sort of copy a bit of audio and paste it into another application, which is, you know, in mobile terms, it is not bad, but, you know, to have applications running concurrently, talking to each other on the same device and theoretically across devices as well, things start to get really interesting. And you run into the possibilities of having a synth application being controlled by a completely innovative controller application. So a couple of the applications, N-Log Synth, which is a fantastic analog model synth, being controlled by an application called Sound Prism, which has a very, very innovative and unique user interface for music. And using Sound Prism to control the synthesizer application is fantastic, but all running on the same device.
Oh, that sounds really cool. I'm just, you know, I make music myself, and I haven't tried to do this kind of cross process within an iOS device. So how would it work practically?
It's really simple. It's really, really simple. A couple of parameters in each application. So that the controller application, you would tell it to switch off its own sound engine, which helps in terms of the amount of CPU it's using. And the other application, you make sure that its MIDI is set up on. In fact, both of the applications I quoted haven't actually hit the App Store yet, or the versions that will have Core MIDI implemented haven't hit the App Store. So the exact implementation I'm not sure of, but it will be very, very straightforward.
Oh, okay, cool. Very cool.
You have them both running and off you go, and that's it. And yeah, it will be really cool, but I think really cool probably won't do it justice. It will be much better than that.
If I was American, I would say awesome, but I'll
we'll refrain.
In terms of, you know, you're talking about Core MIDI, you're talking about implementation of pretty heavyweight apps on the iPhone and the iPad. So to start with, the field of mobile music on iOS devices was pretty much developed by people that were not in the big business of music making. They were not the native instruments of this world. They were more like independent groups of developers that were making some great apps. You mentioned Beatport earlier. That is one of the earliest ones. But there's a shift, actually, with the big manufacturers lately, and more of the big name manufacturers are coming into this game and starting to realize the potential of iOS games.
I mean, you're absolutely right. When iOS music making applications started off, you had a lot of, you know, one-man bands, maybe two or three guys developing. And, you know, in many ways, that's still the case. I'd say probably of the developers I know, which will probably be the majority of the market, they're mainly small firms with less than five people. Yep. And there's still a significant number of developers who are working on their own. I think the great thing about that is that Apple set the entry barrier to develop for their platform very low. So actually, it's incredibly easy for someone sitting in their back bedroom to get into the market.
Yeah.
What we're seeing more of now, and it's a really interesting time to be, you know, working with mobile music technology, is some of the bigger music development studios coming in and dipping their toe in the water to see what this whole, you know, sort of mobile music thing is about. So this year we've had ImageLine have brought their FL Studio product to the iPad and to the iPhone.
Yeah.
Some time ago, Korg came into the market with their iElect Tribe. Then they've also brought the IMS 20.
Yeah.
And they're doing some really interesting things with taking software on the device and bringing it into, you know, a hardware context at the same time. So what Korg have done is they have the iElect Tribe and IMS 20, which can synchronize with each other using their own proprietary technology called WIST. But then they've developed an application that allows you to plug into a Monotribe, you know, analog hardware, and control the tempo of the Monotribe through the iPad application.
That's great.
So, you know, making all these things work together. Now, this week has been a great week because earlier this week, Native Instruments announced that they they're bringing out a new version of their machine hardware called Machine Micro, which is, you know, nice and small and very tempting. And they're also bringing iMachine for the iPhone and iPod. So, And what's interesting about what they're doing with that is that the application, or what they're saying about the application, which will launch in October, is that you'll be able to create a project in the application and then move it into the desktop software and hardware.
Yeah.
So integrating to a degree, and you know, it's great to see different companies doing it in different ways. You know, Korg's emphasis on going, well, you know, we've got an iPad application or a suite of iPad applications, and we want to bring it into the analog hardware domain as well. Native Instruments doing something quite different. ImageLine with FL Studio doing something different. And you know, different companies, different approaches. And I think what's great for the mobile music market at the moment is nobody's got it right.
Yeah.
People are experimenting, and that's what makes it, you know, an exciting place to be at the moment.
And one thing that is super interesting is that the first thing you would think about big companies like Native Instruments getting into this game is that they would be very worried about, or Korg, very worried about cannibalizing their own market for hardware, because hardware is where they make the big bucks. You know, hardware synthesizers cost into the thousands of pounds. So you would think that there would be some you know, product development person or you know, marketing person out there from these companies thinking, what are we doing? Like we are giving access to these applications for a fraction of the price of the hardware that we sell. So do you think there is this kind of thought at the back of their minds?
I think to a degree. But I think also, and I mean, some of the companies I talked to some of the people at Korg, and I think they recognised that if they didn't do something with the iPad, someone else was going to occupy the space for them. I think you know what we've seen with controller applications is there's a host of really really high quality controller applications for the iPad available now for controlling things like Ableton Live. But none of them are from the big, you know, desktop manufacturers.
Yeah.
So if some of these big companies don't occupy the space, if they don't bring their products, if they don't bridge from the desktop or from hardware into the mobile domain, I think someone else is going to do it for them.
Yeah.
And I think companies are slowly waking up to that. So it's great to see companies like Yamaha, who, you know, the Tenorian was a great product. And the original one cost, you know, was it £900?
Yeah.
And the cheaper version was about £600. For most home musicians, that's completely out of reach.
Yeah.
Whereas if you've got an iPad already, you can add the Tenorian application for, I think it was about £12 or something like that. I mean, it's a fraction of the cost. So great to see someone like Yamaha bringing an already innovative product into a mobile environment, and in fact expanding its innovative nature by making it a collaborative music product, so people can actually play together using Apple's Game Center.
Yeah,
which was a great idea. So
really
interesting what people are doing. Really interesting the reasons why. Of course, you know, well, as far as I'm aware, no one's saying why they're doing what they're doing. But I think everyone is experimenting. And I think there is a realization within the market that this is not going to go away.
Yeah.
Mobile music is here to stay. And if anything, it's only going to get bigger.
Yeah. And I mean, if you know, Korg was expecting, for example, to sell their newest top line synth for a couple of grand and maybe selling, you know, 10,000 of them, maybe. I don't know what the numbers could be for them, but you know, they could certainly multiply that exponentially by just being exposed to the iPad market for sure.
Yeah, and you know, the iPad market applications there. Of course, one of the things that you do benefit from is global distribution.
Yeah,
an instant global distribution, which makes life very easy. So if you are a hardware distributor, you've got all your retailers, you've got inventory to manage. If you move something into the mobile space with through Apple's App Store, suddenly all of that cost and effort is taken away.
And warranty, okay. Hardware money, hardware maintenance and all that.
So it does make life a lot easier. Of course, talking about, you know, someone like Korg selling hardware, of course, one of the things that they've done is made their Monotribe hardware, which is really quite cheap comparatively, more accessible through using it with an iOS device.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting way to pull people towards buying the hardware using the software.
Yeah.
Sure. And in effect is what Apple's strategy was.
Yeah, definitely. And One company that's done something really cool, you know, I think it's sold out in a lot of places and it's been quite successful so far, is the Alesis IoDoc that they released a couple of months ago. So what's your take on that? I know you've talked to a few people that have actually worked on that project.
I mean, I thought the IoDoc was a very, very bold project for Alesis to come out with. And talking to people from the company, it is interesting to see it really did morph from something completely different into what is now the IoDoc. I think what Alesis have done is to try and move mobile music making further along the spectrum, if you like, of from, you know, amateur or someone who's completely a non-musician who might tinker with an application here or there, to further down the line towards the professional level. And I think they've done a great job on that. You know, it's a really high quality piece of hardware. What was most interesting is what lots of users of the hardware have said is that actually they really love the MIDI implementation on it. But from Alesis's point of view, that was an afterthought. And I think if they do a revision of it, they'll make more of the MIDI. And make it even more MIDI capable. Because, you know, what with Core MIDI coming along and a lot of application developers moving in that direction, I think MIDI for mobile devices is just going to get more exciting. And there's other manufacturers moving in that direction too. IK Multimedia are bringing a MIDI adapter for the iPhone and iPad. So are Yamaha and Line 6, you know, just moved on to their second version of their MIDI adapter. So MIDI and mobile devices it is going to be big. And I think we'll see more audio adapters for mobile devices. In fact, Fostex announced a few weeks ago an audio adapter for the iPhone 4. So, you know, from a hardware perspective, it's a very, very interesting market. And I think, you know, just to take that a little bit further, other stuff that we've seen in the last 18 months, of course, Akai brought their SynthStation 25, which was a micro keyboard for the iPhone 3G and 3GS, and have announced the SynthStation 49 for the iPad, which is, you know, a good sized controller. And Korg have built in support for their Nano Control 2 and the Series 2 of their Nano devices. So there are lots of people moving into this area and doing very innovative things. But I think, you know, just going back to the point I made earlier, so much of it is experimentation and looking at different ways of doing things. It's very exciting. Talk for a long time.
No, it's super cool. And I think that, you know, the cool thing is that Alesis seem to have beaten everybody to the punch on that one, because as soon as people saw the IoDoc, you know, there were talks about it being fake. People were like, no, I can't believe this is actually real. And then when it actually came out and it worked, people were just blown away, because, you know, it's something that as soon as you see it and you think about it, you think, yeah, that's an absolutely great idea. But I don't think any other of the other manufacturers had the foresight of believing that the hardware of the iPad could support this kind of capabilities, I think.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Interestingly, though, Alesis also brought out some years ago a thing called the ProTrack, which was an iPhone, it was an iPod adapter for, I think it added two stereo microphones, or I can't remember exactly what it was. But so that, you know, they've been in the market for a long time. That product probably didn't get the kind of recognition that it should have at the time. I think with the IoDoc, it's arrived at just the right time, and it is just the right product.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's hit that sweet spot. And, you know, as you said earlier, it's just selling out everywhere.
Yeah, it's a bit like, it's kind of like the iPad itself.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to take a year for other manufacturers to catch up on making something like that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, people will build on that success, and I'm sure that Alesis will as well. I'm sure, hopefully, when we see a revision to it, you know, they'll do even more interesting things with it.
Yeah. One thing I want to talk about was the idea of sort of operating a whole sequencer on the iPad versus operating like a standalone synth, because some of the most advanced apps that I've seen were, for example, the Korg ones and a lot of apps that operate synth-based software. And GarageBand still seems like the most comprehensive application in terms of sequencing, sure, that you know can encompass multi-track audio and MIDI controls and everything else. So why do you think, you know, how do you see this developing? Do you see more people coming into this sequencing sort of world from a pro standpoint?
Well, I'd sort of answer that question by sort of stepping back a little bit, and I think the way that applications have sort of evolved for mobile devices, if you look back quite a few years, there were lots of these sort of all-in-one or, you know, digital audio workstation to a degree kind of applications, and what iOS has encouraged in a sense is more a sort of an approach from developers where they will develop either an instrument or a synthesizer, as you said a moment ago, or perhaps a controller application. So there's been quite a lot of interesting innovation with applications that are instruments in their own right, or applications that do a certain function, like it might be a MIDI controller. There are certainly less applications which are more like GarageBand, and of course there are several that came way before GarageBand. And you mentioned the Korg applications and things like the IMS20, which is a, you know, synth sample sequencer and you know, quite an incredible piece of software engineering. But applications like Nano Studio, which is, you know, a multi-track synth sequencer, are absolutely fantastic. And if you're used to making music with something, say, slightly more advanced or sort of the next level on from GarageBand on the desktop, it wouldn't be an unfamiliar environment to you at all. Similarly with something like Intuos Beatmaker 2, which is another, you know, superb application. That, again, is a great environment, you know, multiple tracks, insert effects, full mixing. You know, the superb application if you want everything in one place. I don't think we'll see those kind of applications disappear, because they are the kind of applications where you want to be able to bring everything together. And I think those kind of things will continue to develop and add more features and become, in a sense, more like the desktop. I think things like GarageBand, or what Apple has done with GarageBand, has in a way encouraged people to explore mobile music creation and probably seek out some more of those applications. There are quite a number of sort of sequencer synth sampling packages out there. Probably Nano Studio and Beatmaker 2 are certainly the ones that always come to my mind, and probably the ones that I keep going back to. But there are others, things like Music Studio or Akai's own SynthStation application. You know, there's quite a number of apps that fall into that domain. And in fact, there's a few lists on the blog of, you know, apps and different categories of them. So, you know, if anyone wants to have a look at what's available, there are lists available on the blog. I don't think that those will go away, but what's interesting is where people are doing things that are completely different from that, and doing instruments in their own right. So if you look at an application like ThumbJam, which is, you know, without question, an instrument, a very expressive instrument, or Sound Prism, which has a completely unique user interface. Those are the applications where people will find new ways of expressing music in that not, you know, in a completely non-traditional way, and in a way that you can't replicate on the desktop at the moment. So that it's kind of a roundabout way of answering your question.
It makes absolute sense. And people that are listening now will have realized that we are talking only about iPhones and iPads. What is the status on Android? You know, is there any progress being made? What are the limitations of that environment?
Well, I mean, Android in its own right, so, you know, there's nothing wrong with Android. There's no severe problems with Android as an operating system. But when you come to use it, or when you come to look at it from a music application perspective, it has one problem that just keeps coming back, and that's the problem of audio latency. So on an iOS device, you might have latency as low as 5 milliseconds or 10 milliseconds. On Android, it's going to be more like 100. According to the developers that I've talked to. And for real-time audio, that's really just not workable. Now, some developers have got around this. Some developers have done some really interesting things with it. There's a chap called Oliver who's the developer of an application called NanoLoop, which started back on Game Boy Advance and has moved from there and is still, in fact, still supported on Game Boy.
Wow.
But is also on the iPhone and also on Android as well now. But that's the exception and not the rule.
Yeah.
There are a relatively small number of music creation applications available for Android. There are a number of developers who are looking at it. ImageLine are talking about bringing Android an Android version of their FL Studio mobile product, but there's no one big there yet. So there's no ImageLine as yet. There's no Korg there as yet. There's no Native Instruments there as yet. And hopefully, over time, Google will see that, you know, correcting this opens up to a huge number of users the creative potential of these mobile devices. But as yet, that's not happened. And, you know, talking to a number of developers, they don't see it as something that's going to be big on Google's radar because, you know, music and creative software is not part of their core business, so why would it matter to them? Hopefully, at some point it will, but at the moment, they're probably 2 or 3 years behind where we are with iOS.
Sure, and of course, there's also the massive hardware limitation of not knowing what your application is going to be played on, because on iOS devices, as much as the system might be less powerful than some of the Android devices that have been released now, at least you have a consistency in the experience whilst... I'm sure that on Android devices, it'd be very problematic to know what device is going to support what.
Device fragmentation in Android is a bigger problem than on iOS, although it's still a problem on iOS because obviously there are, you know, there's four series of iPods iPhones, and there's two of the iPad, and of course different people are on different versions of the operating system.
Yeah.
So there is a degree of fragmentation there, but it's nothing like what developers have to cope with on Android, where you know, you've got different handsets, different screen sizes, all sorts. So
yeah, sure. That must be a nightmare. There's been some rumors in the last couple of days that Apple is going to come out with Logic X. Do you think that they might have some sort of strategy to port something a little bit more professional on mobile other than GarageBand, or do you think that's the extent to which they are willing to go?
I think that's a great question. And you know, talking to a few colleagues, you know, about you know, what is Apple's strategy for the mobile platform? Will they merge the desktop and mobile? And you know, a few weeks ago, yes, probably a few weeks ago over the summer, there was suddenly a lot of rumors about an iPad 3, but not as an iPad 3, but as an iPad Pro.
Yeah.
And you know, if you take the analogy of what they had at that point on the desktop, they had, you know, the MacBook Pro, MacBook Air. Why not an iPad and an iPad Pro?
Yeah.
Sounds quite reasonable. Sounds quite sensible. And people were saying, well, if they do that, and they, you know, really ramp up the processor and the RAM, why not have something like, you know, Logic on the iPad? All these things are possible.
Yeah.
As you know, Apple won't say anything until it's done.
Yeah, sure.
So who knows? I think if they brought an iPad Pro, then you know, I think we'd be more likely to see things like Aperture come to the iPad first.
Yeah, sure.
And for it to go from that sort of professional application, then possibly to music and something like Final Cut for the iPad.
Yeah.
I mean they've brought the consumer suite of applications into the mobile domain.
Yeah.
The next logical step from you know our position as commentators is to take it into the professional domain, but that's no guarantee that Apple will do it. I don't know.
Yeah, and it could be like a good thing as well as a really bad thing, because everybody's terrified that Logic 10 is actually going to be a completely watered down version of Logic.
Yeah.
So who knows what's in the works on that one, and if it's gonna, and even if Apple have realized with the kind of disaster they had with
Final Cut,
that that's not the right way to go for professionals.
yeah. So I don't know. I mean, hopefully they will learn from that, that, you know, that not to repeat that mistake.
Yeah.
But who knows? I mean, I think we'd all love to see something like Logic on the desktop, and for Apple to push the boundaries.
Yeah.
But not to kill the market at the same time. And I think, you know, when they brought GarageBand to the iPad, people saying, oh, you know, they're going to kill the market. They're gonna, you know, everything's going to go. And the reverse has happened,
In
my opinion. Yeah, it's continued to flourish. So I think if they can do something like that and you know, push the boundaries up for developers and push the level up, I think it can only be a good thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see.
And we've talked briefly about, you know, a possible iPad Pro, you know, the developments on the hardware side, both on mobile phones and on tablet systems. So what do you think is going to be the primary use for these devices? Do you think we're likely to see them as a replacement for instruments on stage? Do you think people are more likely to use them as portable studios to compose stuff on the move? How do you see that, you know, the use of tablets and mobile phones for music going forward?
I think there is always that the use for the tablet and the mobile device to be used as a musical sketchpad.
Yeah.
I think that will persist. I think as the devices get more powerful, and with people like Alesis and the IO Dock, as the quality of output that's capable of achieving with these devices increases, we'll see more and more people use them in professional environments. I think coupled with that, you know, developers are continually moving forward and evolving their products and pushing forward the you know, what is possible with these devices. And you know, you look at an iPhone and an iPad, and they are tiny, and yet what you can produce with them is really quite incredible, and way beyond the capability of what you might have imagined 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
So I think in 2 or 3 years we'll be looking back at 2011 and saying, "Wow, weren't things simple back then?"
Sure.
Well, yeah. Some of those applications—is that all they really did?
Yeah.
So I think complexity will increase, and the amount that you can do and the interoperability of applications will grow exponentially.
And one last thing: have you got like one or two or three, you know, however many apps or things that are about to come out, maybe, or you know, recent upgrades that you'd advise people that listen to the show to check out?
Okay, I definitely say look at Nlog, which is by a company called Tempo Rubato, and there's an Nlog for the iPhone, an Nlog for the iPad, and there's even a Mac version. It's a great synth application. Sound Prism, which I talked about earlier, again, is a great user interface. But certainly, if you're looking for synths, I'd say definitely Nlog, something like Addictive Synth. If you're looking for something that does everything in one space, then definitely the Korg IMS20,
yeah.
Nano Studio, which works on the iPhone, and Beatmaker 2. Those are all great applications. But
that's great.
There's too many.
That's cool. And of course, I should state again the website, which is the-palm-sound.blogspot.com, which has got a huge amount of resources. You know, you've amassed so much over the last 5 years. And, I can only imagine, because I've only been doing the podcast for like 2.5. So, and I've got quite a big backlog of episodes. So, so check out the site, and also check out the Twitter feed, so you can keep up to date with the new posts and the news in this field, which is at Palm Sound, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah. Palm Sounds.
At Palm Sounds with an S.
Yeah.
Cool. That's absolutely great. And actually, it was great having you on the show. And
it's great to talk to you.
Definitely would like to have you again and talk about the latest developments.
That's great. Thank you. Love to come back.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
Thank you.
Well, that's all for this week. I really hope you enjoy the show. As usual, you can find more information on the podcast and previous episodes at digitalmusictrends.com. You can also follow me on Twitter. The handle is DGMusicTrends. It's the best way to keep up to date with when the new episodes are coming out, as well as signing up to the newsletter, which is on digitalmusictrends.com. And finally, you can find the podcast also on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/digitalmusictrends. Have a great week, and until next time. Digital music. Trans. Digital music.